Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soucy.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on X, at Matthew Soucy. This show is available on iTunes, and like all the podcasts here at WFYI, available on Spotify. Well, friends, we're going to be catching up and talking about some new films as well as stuff that opened last week. But I want to thank everybody's patience and understanding for there being no show last week. And I'll get into that in a little bit. Sometimes it's in the timing of films that we watch. But opening in theaters this weekend, friend, I can't believe that the film I'm recommending this week is the new film from director Eli Roth. Yes, Thanksgiving is finally out in theaters. Now, friends, a little backstory. I was one of those who got to experience the epic film experience Grindhouse in the theaters. That was, of course, two short films made by Quentin Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez with a myriad of trailers before the film and in between the features. And so far, we've had now three films based on the fake trailers. Machete, of course, directed by Robert Rodriguez, and its sequel, Machete Kills, this film. And then there was a contest for if whoever had the best fake trailer, it would get onto the home video release of Grindhouse. And the winner of that was Hobo with a Shotgun, later made into a film with Rutger Hauer. So, of the trailers, the fake trailers in Grindhouse, I think Thanksgiving was my favorite because it made fun of the calendar horror movies, slasher movies of the late 70s, early 80s. You know, Halloween, Friday the 13th, New Year's Evil, Silent Night, Deadly Night, Happy Birthday to Me. There's a lot of those films' elements in this film. And there had been long word that there was going to be a film version of this finally. I'm not a fan of Eli Roth's work. I'm not a fan of Hostel. And I've seen a couple of his films and just not my cup of tea. But I have to admit that when it comes to Thanksgiving, Eli Roth, along with writer Jeff Rendell, they get the tone right. It is a Valentine to those calendar slasher movies, as well as the not quite Scooby Gang ensemble of mystery solvers like the kids in I Know What You Did Last Summer, or its sequel, I Still Know What You Did Last Summer. There is a killer running amok in Plymouth, Massachusetts. The opening scene of this is actually really one of the best things I've seen all year, and it's the horror of a Black Friday sale, which is happening on Thanksgiving because it keeps getting earlier and earlier. But there was a well-to-do local store that basically winds up having a riot, and folks are crushed and folks are killed in a myriad of not nice ways at all, including, if blink and you miss her, a cameo from Gina Gershon. This sets up the revenge plot. Somebody was affected by the riots, and now they've donned a mask and Thanksgiving garb and are taking down people one by one. Watching this, I was reminded of, like I said, the slasher movies of my youth, where there are pecking orders on who we want to live and others we wouldn't mind if they went away or not. Unfortunately, that it's probably... I don't see as many slasher films as I did back then, but that's kind of that pecking order here. The young performances are pretty good. Patrick Dempsey is probably the most familiar, and as well as Gina Gershon are the most familiar faces, at least of my generation. But we do have some really Addison Rae, who plays the I'm sorry, it's not her. She's the other one. The other one with long straight hair. Nell Verlac, who is not really giving away stuff, is kind of the last girl, does a fine job. And they there's also the horror film Logic. That comes into play, and it just kind of a wink and a nod to those pictures. The killing scenes are brutal. They're way more harsh than they were in my day, and that's kind of one of Eli Roth's strengths, or maybe deterrences, depending on how you feel about these films. And then there, if you've seen the film, the trailer for Thanksgiving, the original one. And you're asking, are all of the scenes recreated? Almost. Yes, there is a trampoline scene. Yes, there is a dinner scene. No, they don't. There's no scene involving an unnatural act and a turkey, or in this case, a person. So that scene is not recreated. But everything else is kind of to the letter of that trailer. So the dinner elements that remind me of Happy Birthday to Me and the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So it because of the tone, and it's aware that it is an homage to these other films, there's not as nasty a spirit. It's not as mean-spirited as some of the other horror films that have been out lately. Now I sound like an old man on the front porch. But this was a good throwback for my youth, and I enjoyed it. I don't see that many scary movies, because I would rather check out other material. But as far as the tone and the homage to those films of my youth, the other setback for me was I saw it on Thursday evening in an advanced screening, and there was only five of us. I really, really hope if you get a chance to see Thanksgiving in the theater, and I hope you do. Hopefully it's with a good crowd, a good rowdy crowd. This is one where you're yelling at the screen, like back in our day. So yeah, I'm actually recommending the film Thanksgiving from Eli Roth that opens in theaters this weekend. So there you go, and there will be no leftovers. Also opening in theaters next week, but we had a preview of it, is the latest film from Disney called Wish, where set on a remote island in the Mediterranean or California or Florida, you'll find out. But there's an annual ceremony where the king allows a handful of wishes to come true. Everybody has a wish on this island. We follow this young girl named Asha, who is voiced by Ariana DeBose, who's very good in her vocal work here. And what happens when things do not appear as they seem, and things are not looking as well to do in the country, in the village that she lives in? There is a goat that winds up getting the voice of Alan Tudyk, which is always a good move. There is a cute little star, which reminds me of Star from the Goodnight Show. Hi, M. But early on, if you pay attention very carefully, you start to notice some familiar characters from other products or from other Disney works. And the thing that's the bummer for me about this film is it trying to be an origin story for the product, for the brand? And that it kind of feels that way for me. And you especially get it at the end of the film, which really kind of took me out of it. So what I did like about it, like I said, the vocal work by Ariana DeBose is good. Chris Pine is really good in this as the king. He gets to lean in and chew some scenery with a knife and fork. And I think Pine is also ready for the second half of his career where, yes, he is still handsome and younger than me, but he is ready to do character roles if need be. So he was fun to listen to. The songs are all right. I will say, I have an issue with when you have certain songs in which they mention artists, and I don't mean Bruce Springsteen mentioning Roy Orbison's For the Lonely. That's fine. But this happens especially in the blues world where they rattle off a bunch of blues greats, B.B. King, Albert King, Robert Johnson, Booker White, Elmore James, and it feels like they're trying to elevate their name to their level. Well, when we get into the closing credits especially, when you start seeing star-eyed versions of other Disney characters, that's what this feels like. Like lazy writing and, like I said, in kind of an infomercial origin story for the concept of Disney being the happiest place on earth where all the wishes come true. So that kind of set me off. Now, that being said, during the screening, there were two young boys behind me, and they loved it. And so, obviously, it's made for those kids. As a parent, you know, it's like I said, it's a mixed bag, especially because I'm an old film guy. But I was talking with Chris Lloyd and with Joe Shearer. Hi, guys, fellow IFJA members. And I almost want to create a rating based on how old is your kid going to want to watch this every day for like 2 months? So if you got young ones, go for it. Parents, you'll sit through better things, I hope. But yeah, Wish opens next week. You've been warned. We now shift gears from one of the bigger disappointments of the season, for me, one of the best films of the year. I finally caught up with Alexander Payne's The Holdovers, set in 1970, where a history teacher in a boys' prep school has to stay on campus over the holidays with the kids who were left behind for various reasons. Paul Giamatti plays the teacher. We also have Divine Joy Randolph as the school cook, Mary Lamb. I also know her as the police officer from Only Murders in the Building. And we have Dominic Sessa playing Angus Tully, one of the students that has to stay over. This is I love Alexander Payne's work. Obviously, very human stories. There's much talk about this being a 70s film, and it does have that 70s persona where maybe not the most likable person in the world, Paul Giamatti, starts to warm up as time goes on. We also have three very different people thrown together in a situation. Anybody who's had to work over the holidays or stay over for the holidays, my wife teaches at a college. We've had what we call Thanksgiving orphans, those who are international students who couldn't get home, and that's brought up in this film a little bit. But three lost souls for different reasons finally bonding, and they become the little village for each other. Really lovely performances from all three. Kudos especially for Dominic Sessa for standing his own with the likes of Paul Giamatti. But it is, you know, it has been referred to as a 70s film, and obviously very character-driven. There's elements for me of The Last Detail, as well as some other 70s films that have now left my memory. But it's very funny. And the other flashback for me was when my wife got to do a Christmas Carol down in Louisville at the Actors Theater of Louisville, they all had to be stay in town for Thanksgiving, and just having a Thanksgiving dinner with the cast and crew because you couldn't go home. And it was one of the more memorable Thanksgivings in my life. But so watching the three people connect that have nothing in common and will forever change all three of them, I really, really enjoyed The Holdovers. And I'll be watching it again, hopefully with Mrs. Sosie, very quickly. All right, shifting to video, it's not just watching a film, but also the state that you're in that has an effect on people. And I think we forget that, or certain critics and certain audience members, we don't bring that up. Sometimes you just have a lousy day and you need a film for escape, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And I want to talk about a film that just came out on a video a few weeks back, and I'm trying to catch up on the never-ending pile of videos. Much love to Kino Lorber Film Movement and Wellgo USA for their patience, because we're also in award screening season. But my brother's memorial service was last week, and Lynn and I had a very quick round trip to Michigan and back on a Wednesday. And I had Thursday off, and I get to the pile of movies, the never-ending pile, and I'm trying to chisel away at that. And at the top of the pile, was a film called Ride On from Welgo, USA. And if you'd have told me that a film about an aging stuntman played by Jackie Chan along with his horse is the thing that kind of hits you in the soft spot and makes you break down emotionally, well, congratulations. That's what happened. You won the pony, so to speak. Ride On, from writer-director Larry Yang, stars Jackie Chan, who's almost 70 and still in great shape and still doing as many of his stunts as humanly possible. But he plays an aging stuntman who is now working on the studio lot one of the attractions for photos and tours and things like that, along with his retired racehorse companion. Jackie's character is in debt. We have a young debt collector who wants his horse for back payment. There's a bit of an argument over who owns the horse and who doesn't. There is a company whose CEO has died, and this is the person that gave Jackie the horse for free, but, of course, the debt collectors don't feel that way, which leads to a big fight between an aging Jackie Chan and some young debt collectors, and somehow gets recorded on a camera phone, and Jackie becomes an internet sensation and a new lease on life. So there's that element. We also have Jackie Chan's, his character's estranged daughter, who held a grudge against her dad because when mom was on her deathbed, dad was on a shoot. There's also her boyfriend, who is an up-and-coming lawyer who's going to help out in the legal case. The boyfriend aspect you could have easily gotten rid of and made the daughter the lawyer, and you probably would have chipped away 10 minutes of this film, which it could have used. A little long because there's so much material to cover. If you're a fan of the boy and their animal films, you know, Lassie, Flicka, National Velvet, this is an older version of that with Chan and his horse companion, who work very well together. It is a Valentine to the aging stuntmen. It is there is a climax near the end of the film on: do you actually do the stunt, or do you let CG just do it for safety's sake? And that is something that stuntmen have been going through the last couple decades. You know, I still love seeing real stunts done by real stunt people and stunt animals if possible. But it's times have changed, and safety is even more of a priority on some of these cases. But it's still fun to see Jackie Chan still making moves when he's almost 70 years old. Also, the fact that I've missed a few of his films since in the last few years. The last time I saw him was in the film The Foreigner with him and versus Pierce Brosnan. It was directed by Martin Campbell. But I just remember when a Jackie Chan film was an event, especially in his American Renaissance in the 1990s. So there, again, it covers a lot of material. You also get to see some of the stunt, some of the old footage of Chan, his not only his stunt work, but also his outtakes. And anyway, it's to watch him interact with this horse. It just kind of hit me in the right spot. So if you're a fan of stunt work and or you're a fan of animals, you could do a lot. Anyway, I highly recommend Ride On, which is on video from Welgo, USA. Go check it out. Also, we had a good streak of videos. Also from Film Movement Classics is a double feature from 1990 called My Father's Glory and My Mother's Castle. And this is set in Provence in the early part of the 20th century. The first one is from the son's point of view. His father is a teacher. And we get to see the family going through its kind of day-to-day life. The boy is able to read at age 3, but mom doesn't want him reading until he's 6 years old. Dad gets a job in Marseille and have to go move. This is also because it's set in the early 20th century, not everybody has electricity or gas or phones. And this teacher is trying to tell the students that they are in a very pivotal time in history, whether they know it or not. The spinster Aunt Rose shows up and becomes a part of the family. And what happens when she meets a man in the park and boom, they immediately get married. So we get this slice of family life. And then the big climax in the second half of the film is when they go for when they go to the country for the summer. And young Marcel wants to go hunting with the adults in the group, and they meet some friends that are their own age. And it's really just kind of it's based on the work and life of Marcel Pagnol, pardon my French, but it's a fun slice of life to watch, and it has its emotional ups and downs and triumphs and disappointments for the young lad. And It's really worth checking out. And then the sequel, which I believe came out a year later, called My Mother's Castle, where Marcel still has the country in his mind. He gets older as the film goes on in My Father's Glory. He's been chosen to represent his school in a scholastic bowl. Mom has a surprise in which they're able to go back to the country for Christmas, and he falls for a girl, and there is that thing of what happens when you have your first crush, what happens when mom and dad have some secrets, especially with each other, and what happens when you're guest at a cottage and you are stopped by the law. There's a lot going on here, and it's a kind of a more bittersweet aspect to My Mother's Castle, especially at the end of the film, which I don't want to get into too much because I want you to check these out. But highly recommend My Father's Glory and My Mother's Castle from Film Movement Classics from France in 1990-1991. And also from Kino Lorber from 1937, The Edge of the World. This is from director Michael Powell, best known for The Red Shoes, which I need to revisit. I saw it. I rented it at Ball State's library years and years ago, and I need to revisit it. But it's about two families on a remote Scottish island, filmed on location in 1937. Kudos of the second unit group with the amazing footage of animals and the countryside. And it's shot in black and white and still stunning, still looks. We have a guy and a girl, Ruth and Andrew, and they're together. A friend of theirs wants to leave the island because the world has changed. That's Ruth's brother, Robbie. Apparently a lot of the island men have meetings about how, because if one person leaves, it affects everybody else when it comes to work and detail. When the fact that there's no electricity, and no doctor on the island, which comes into play later in the film. And there is a meeting and a confrontation between Robbie and Andrew about whether they want Robbie to leave or not. And it leads to, as one does in a men's group, a race up a cliff that's over 1,200 feet high. And what happens if you take the wrong shortcut? Again, not giving away a whole lot, but this moment affects everybody on the island in very harsh ways. And it's really, again, the family drama of this, I would say this could be on a double feature with How Green Was My Valley, only shorter, and great footage. But for a film of the 30s not to turn into melodrama, what happens when a character winds up having a baby, and what happens when folks have to, you know, the debate is, do you evacuate the island or don't you? And then a heartbreaking ending, which, again, I don't want to give away because I want you to check it out. But since I have a special place in my heart for Scotland, very impressed. Very impressed. And I need to check out more Michael Powell films. So from Kino Lorber from 1937, The Edge of the World. And I know there's some bonus footage I need to, special features I want to get to. Thelma Schoonmaker, everyone's favorite film editor, is a part of that. So go check that out. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. All right, let's go around the horn. First off, want a big shout out to the Golden Globus Theater guys. This week, they are talking about the film The Dungeon Master, a.k.a. Rage War, as a nod to actor Richard Mull. So very cool on those guys. And last week, they did Kinjite, Forbidden Subjects. And if you've been following this podcast, third time's a charm. So, yeah, big shout out to the guys up in Michigan. But, yeah, check out Golden Globus Theater. They're fun. Okay. The drive-ins are done because it's November, even though I'm still wearing sandals this week. But no, thank you to the Tibbs and the Skyline for all their info. Over at IU Cinema on Friday, November 17th, 7 p.m. from 2004, the film 2046. On Tuesday, November 28th, Twice Colonized at 7 p.m. Wednesday, November 29th, Smile for Kim at 4 p.m. Thursday, November 30th at 7 p.m. is Normal Love. And Friday, December 1st, just announced new 2K restoration of Jodorowsky's The Holy Mountain. That's Friday, December 1st at 7 p.m. So make a note of that. Over at the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin, this weekend, Friday and Saturday, 2 and 7:30 p.m., the original Rocky from 1976. Friday and Saturday, November 24th and 25th, and then Sunday, November 26th, 2 and 5:30 p.m., A Muppet Christmas Carol. And then Friday and Saturday, December 1st and 2nd, 2 and 7:30 p.m., and Sunday, December 3rd at 2 and 5:30 p.m. is Elf. Friday and Saturday, December 8th and 9th, 2 and 7:30 p.m., and Sunday, December 10th, 2 and 5:30 p.m., It's a Wonderful Life. All of that is happening at the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin. Over at the Can-Can, they are wrapping up their noir series. Actually, this weekend is Elevator to the Gallows. Some titles that are coming soon, Saltburn, The Fantastic Mr. Fox is going to be shown there. The AV Club Carnival of Blood on the 27th, as well as Art House of Horror, Spider Baby on the 28th. Devil in a Blue Dress on December 2nd, December 3rd and 6th, Monty Python and the Holy Grail. It's a quote-along. Oh, Mrs. Sosie's going to love that. All Creatures Great and Small is a sneak peek at the Can-Can on December 10th. That's a WFYI event. December 11th, Female Trouble with Vanity Rex. And December 16th, Silent Night, Deadly Night Part 2, also with Vanity Rex. The Color Purple on December 26th, as well as on December 26th, the Art House of Horror, the original Black Christmas, which was also known as Silent Night, Evil Night, but no, this is Black Christmas. This is the one with directed by Bob Clark with Margot Kidder and Olivia Hussey and John Saxon. So all of that's happening over at the Can-Can. All right, friends. Grab a pencil. Let's find out what you've been watching this week. Hopefully you got to watch some good movies that are new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. We start on X with Linda, who writes in all caps, Baby Driver, OMG. I'm glad you got to it. That's a fun film to watch, so I'm glad you got to experience that. And Renee writes The Ladies Man from 1931 with William Powell and Kay Francis. So that is over there on X. We flip over to Facebook. We start with Maggie, who writes Priscilla. And yes, I also enjoyed Priscilla. Don't go in expecting Baz Luhrmann's version of Priscilla Presley. This is very much Sofia Coppola. Really good work by the leads. And the biggest laugh of the year came at the end of Priscilla when she is leaving Graceland for the last time in this game, leaving her husband, and it's set to I Will Always Love You by Dolly Parton. That is a song that Elvis tried to record, but when he records your songs, he gets co-share of the royalties. This happened with Mac Davis. This happened with Jerry Reed. And Dolly was the first artist to turn him down. And look how that turned out. So anyway, Maggie, I'm glad you got to enjoy Priscilla. Linda writes Champions and Change of Habit. Speaking of Elvis. Evren writes The Burbs. Lou Harry writes Wish. Catherine writes The Marvels, The Quiet Place 2, and You're Next. Doug writes King Kong, Son of Kong, King Kong 1976, and The Time Traveler's Wife. David writes A Nightmare Before Christmas, No Hard Feelings, and Guy Ritchie's The Covenant. Patty writes Lincoln and the Wonderful World of Henry Sugar. Nancy writes The Color Purple again. Dustin writes Great Performances, 42nd Street from 2019. Jason writes All the President's Men, and Spencer started 1001, need to finish it. Okay, thank you, Jason. Jed writes, watched Talk to Me for the first time. Thought it was an awesome film. Also put on one of my favorites, All Through the Night, with Humphrey Bogart and Peter Lorre. Jessica writes, Extraordinary, Prisoners of the Ghostland, Anything for Jackson, and Totally Killer. Garland writes Doctor Who the Movie from 1996. David writes Snatch, Goldfinger, and From Russia with Love. Ed writes Squaring the Circle. Eric writes Misery. Watch your feet there, Eric. Dan writes Paths of Glory. Joe Shearer writes Lakota Nation versus the United States. Everyone Will Burn, The Killer, When Evil Lurks, Birth Rebirth, and Wish. Devin writes Coco. Thank you. Sorry, Andrew was making a comment on my GIF of Phoebe Cates. It is perfection. Kevin Klein agrees. Jennifer writes Almost Famous, which I'd like to watch every week, and A Haunting in Venice, which was gorgeous. Daniel writes Bride of Frankenstein, Bugsy, After the Thin Man, Spy, and Harlow. Ryan writes Sing, Sing 2, and King's Knights of the Zodiac. Scotty Scooter, hey, he writes, saw a pre-release of Dream Scenario last night before I left L.A. for the holidays. Nick Cage's best work in years. Also saw Theater Camp, which was a bit disappointing, but theater kids will like it anyway. Correct. Also saw Anatomy of a Fall, which won the Palme d'Or at Cannes. Excellent film, but I doubt it will appeal to American sensibilities by and large. Thank you, Scooter. Don't forget, you need to watch Skidoo with me. Eric writes, first views, Black Sabbath, I See a Dark Stranger, Song of the Thin Man, and The Killer. His rewatches, Green for Danger, Blow Up, The Grifters, Crossfire, The Russians Are Coming, The Russians Are Coming, and the latest Criterion additions to my library, His Girl Friday, Rashomon, and an upgrade from DVD to Blu-ray of The Seventh Seal. So good. Thank you, Eric. Very thorough as usual. Abby writes, saw the Marvels last Saturday, with a couple of smile emojis. Terry writes, from the last 2 weeks. Thank you, Terry. The Phantom of the Monastery, So Long at the Fair, Donnie Darko, Possession, Time Bandits, Spirits of the Dead, Manowar Chronicles, Mirage Men, and Green for Danger. Thank you, Terry. Amanda went to the library and saw Calendar Girls, The Woodsman, Election, which I also revisited earlier this week because of Mr. Payne's work, and Cobweb. Thank you, Amanda. Chris writes Albert Brooks defending his life on HBO. His reverence within the comedy community is unrivaled, in my opinion. Thank you, Chris. Agreed. Jamie writes Pitch Perfect and Pitch Perfect 2, Puss in Boots, The Last Wish, Hotel Transylvania, Transformania, and The Osbournes, Night of Terror. Connor writes Saw 4 and 5, as well as Rat Race. Kevin writes Guy Ritchie's The Covenant. Bill writes Interstellar. Christine writes Killing of a Sacred Deer. Yikes. Yes, I understand, Christine. Or as they say in that film, yes, I understand, Christine. Taylor writes Casablanca, Killer, Cry Terror, and Andrew Blake's Pinups. Adam writes Session Number 9, Bottoms, and Joyride. Brian writes First Time Viewings, House of the Devil, Five Nights at Freddy's, Kronos, Black Christmas, and the documentary Squaring the Circle, which Brian dubbed so good. Jenny writes, I streamed The Forgotten Flowers of Alice Hart. It was very good and well acted. JJ writes a bunch of films. Priscilla, great performances. The Social Network, Whiplash, love this movie. The Killer, have to watch again to absorb. And Anatomy of a Fall. Rebecca writes The Last Black Man in San Francisco, as well as the Indianapolis LGBT Film Festival movies. Thank you, Rebecca. Melissa writes Wish, Maestro, Final Destination 3, and Somewhere in Queens. Gary writes Jacob's Ladder, Addicted to Fresno, Robinson Crusoe on Mars, Little Lloyd Fauntleroy, and Looking for Johnny. Ray Steele writes Hot Potato, The Story of the Wiggles, not to be confused with the Jim Kelly Black Belt Jones sequel, also called The Hot Potato. Just putting that out there. Lori writes Squaring the Circle, Miss Americana, and Keys of the Heart. Kevin writes Love and Mercy. Pat writes the Marvels, The Holdovers, and Next Goal Wins. Abby writes Jurassic Park. David writes Legion, Yogi Berra, It Ain't Over, Killers of the Flower Moon, and M. Mike writes Kicking and Screaming, as well as Gather. Ed writes, I just finished Zombievers. It is much better than the 4.8 rating on IMDb, but it certainly is terrible. Ed, that's why I don't look at the ratings on IMDb, or Rotten Tomatoes for that matter. Brian writes Kansas City Confidential. Jenny writes Naiad, Hunger Games, Songbirds and Snakes, and The Killer. Robert writes The Killer and deemed it meh. And finally, Beverly writes Marcel the Shell, Surprisingly Beautiful, I Cried. So did I, Beverly. It's okay, dear sweet Wall. So there you go. That's what you've been watching this week. So hopefully you got to watch some good films that are new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. Friends, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. They're starting to get out there. We are in the midst of grown-up movie season, so hopefully you have a bunch of good stuff for everybody. Next week, tune in early. You might get a holiday miracle from Film Sociology. So if you're a long-time listener of this show, you'll know who that might be. So anyway, thanks for listening, and we'll try this again next week before the holidays. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
Okay. We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!